You've heard me talk about the Great Courses Plus video learning service for a while now. They help PatioBooks.com financially, and now they'd like to help with your money with free access to their popular course, Understanding Investments. You know they have great courses on topics such as science, history, photography, and more. But now, and for a limited time, the Great Courses Plus is giving PatioBooks.com listeners an incredible opportunity to watch Understanding Investments absolutely free. Understanding Investments is presented by award-winning professor of financial economics at Duke University, Connell Fullenkamp. The course explains the fundamentals of investing for those not familiar with the process and also covers areas that more experienced investors find beneficial. Just for a limited time, the Great Courses Plus is offering our listeners an exclusive chance to stream Understanding Investments, a $215 value, and hundreds of other courses for free. You can stream this course and all the others from any internet-connected TV, PC, or through the Great Courses Plus mobile apps for both iOS and Android devices. To stream Understanding Investments from the Great Courses Plus for free, you must go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/patio. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/PODIO to start streaming absolutely free. Do it today.
You're listening to How to Succeed in Evil, the novel, written and performed by Patrick E. McLean. For more information, visit succeedinevil.com. Chapter 9. What do you want, Mr. Windsor? Edwin emerged uncomfortably from the chartered jet. As he did, all he could see was the top of Dr. Loeb's head as he scampered towards the waiting town car. When Edwin lifted his gaze, he was overwhelmed by the atmosphere of the place. The heat, the humidity, that heavy sweetness in the air mixed with the sharp tang of aviation fuel made it known, not just intellectually, but physically, that he was in the South. Next to the town car, Dr. Loeb waved his good arm at Edwin like a happy spastic. Then he leapt into the back seat. As the car headed north, out into the country, Edwin's discomfort grew. The seats in the plane had been too small for his frame, and even the town car provided no relief. He quite literally did not fit in the world. And this world? The sight of a possum splattered across the road caused him to wrinkle his nose. The trees, gnarled and ancient, disturbed him in ways he could not articulate. It's not that Edwin hated nature. He just preferred the clean lines and precise angles that were to be found in cities. Architecture, art, the refinement of human thinking, this was his support and stimulation. He took inspiration from nature, but only after it had passed through the lens of thought. The things that grunted and burbled in the muck of the damp lowlands of Alabama were messy and imprecise. He wondered how anyone could hold a crease on a suit in this climate. He wondered how one could even hold a thought. He worried that the humidity was swelling his brain. Mercifully, Dr. Loeb was silent for the car ride. Edwin was thankful that the strange little man had managed to get lost in whatever limited imaginings and remembrances he possessed. But he knew peace could not last. And as the car turned off the main road onto a tree-lined private drive, Dr. Loeb said, "Ah, we are here!" In a perverse reaction to this bizarre homecoming, Eustace had intensified his Dr. Loeb performance. His accent had become so thick and imprecise that Edwin was having trouble understanding half of what the odd man said. As a rule, Edwin did not think about things like clichés. He inhabited a world of possible cause and probable effect. So the magnitude of the cliché he faced was wasted on him. The car approached a two-story white plantation house that had been built, rebuilt, and restored to the specifications of an antebellum wet dream. There were white columns, a white balcony, and countless other frilly touches of extra whiteness that were tacked on just in case you forgot what color person was in charge around here. As they exited the car, a well-kept woman in her 60s presented herself on the balcony. She waved to them with a corner of her, you guessed it, white shawl. "Why, Eustace, you have returned," she proclaimed in a sing-song voice that conformed to the standards of the local cliché preservation society. At the sight of his mother and the sound of his real name, Dr. Loeb became embarrassed and defensive.
"Ris forgive this woman," he said awkwardly. "She is deranged. She thinks she is my mother," said Dr. Loeb.
Edwin suppressed a shudder. He loathed having to do this. Surely he had been made for better things than this. Surely. With an effort of will, he banished the thought from his mind. But it would not help him here. "And I see you have brought a friend," Eustace's mother exclaimed with delight.
"This is Herr Winsor."
"I must confess, I haven't the slightest idea what the strange fruit of my loins just said."
"Edwin Winsor, pleased to meet you."
"Mr. Winsor, please forgive my son. He's deranged. But I expect you already knew that. Come in, come in. I shall be glad to receive you in the foyer."
A large black man, who wore a long-suffering expression, as if it was his uniform, emerged from the house and took the luggage. Reluctantly, Edwin followed. As soon as he had forced his way through a wall of cold air created by unseen and no doubt gigantic air-conditioning units, Edwin was assaulted by the sight of Iphigenia Riley floating down a gigantic, curved staircase in a pretty fair approximation of Gone with the Wind. This cliché was also lost on Edwin, as he had not seen the movie. But he could see that this woman was going to be formidable, or at the very least, formidably ridiculous. Dr. Loeb attempted to excuse himself.
"I must see to my work."
"Is that any way to greet your mother?" Iphigenia snapped, her face turning red and ugly. "You don't call. You don't write. I don't have time for all that worry, you realize."
"I was absorbed in my work. I must treat it now."
"You will not see to your work or anything else.
Alabaster,
take him to his room and see that he does not leave. I will deal with him later."
The large black man tucked Eustace under his arm and walked away. Dr. Loeb broke character.
"But Mama!"
The cry was pure Eustace. Iphigenia dismissed him with a wave of his hand and then turned her 1,000-watt southern charm in Edwin's direction.
"I am sorry you had to see that. He was so sweet when he was just a boy. But as he grew, bless his heart."
Edwin was very careful that his expression betrayed none of his thoughts. The entire game could be lost right here. Iphigenia led Edwin to a painfully formal sitting room.
"Do you have any children, Mr. Winsor?"
"No."
"Well, you simply must have some. They are such a delight when they are young."
Now she turned her gaze back to Edwin, and with the full wattage of charm that only generations of gracious living can provide, she said,
"But heavens, where are my manners? Would you care for some tea?"
"Yes, thank you." She rang a small bell, and Alabaster delivered 2 glasses of iced tea on an ornate silver tray. Iphigenia took a sip and sighed with theatrical delight.
"Now, Mr. Winsor, tell me, how is it that you have come to know my
She trailed off when she saw that Edwin was holding his glass of iced tea between his thumb and forefinger, as if it was a dead thing he had found underneath his chair.
"This tea is cold," said Edwin. "Iced. It's called iced tea.
Would it be possible to have a proper cup of tea? A Darjeeling or an Earl Grey, perhaps?" She rang the bell again, and the large black man reappeared.
"Alabaster, what kinds of tea do we have?"
"Pekoe," the large man said clearly, but without expression.
"Will that suffice?"
With the subtlety that only a southern woman can master, Iphigenia asked this question in a way that seemed hospitable, yet indicated that Edwin was being horribly rude. Edwin did not care, and even though he knew it was not to his benefit, he was unable to completely hide his distaste. Orange-cut Pekoe tea, surely brewed from bags, tea bags which invariably contained the lowest grade of tea, it would be little more than dust and twigs and foot sweat from the floor of an Indian tea sorting room. "That will be fine," Edwin managed to say. She nodded to Alabaster, and he went to fetch the tea.
"His family's been in my family for 5 generations, Iphigenia said with pride. "But how rude of me. You haven't come here to discuss history, have you? Tell me, how is it that a man like you has become..."
And here she paused for infinite effect.
"Friends with my son.
Your son has sought me out for my advice."
"And is it you that have advised him to continue with the costume and the ridiculous accent?"
Iphigenia asked, fully expecting Edwin to launch into some long pseudo-scientific defense of Eustace's behavior. "Of course not," Edwin said as he accepted the cup of tea. His long, delicate fingers directed the cup to his mouth, and he drank with a refinement that Iphigenia found irresistible. She saw in an instant that he was an intelligent, cultured man.
She was not entirely sure what he was up to, but with the three short, sensible words of Edwin's response, she had become attracted to him. "I have tried to rid your son of any delusions or affectations," Edwin continued as he delicately replaced the teacup in its saucer. "Evil is not a game. It is a serious and profitable business. You know, there are so few truly tall men in Lower Alabama." Iphigenia blushed lightly. How silly she must seem. She tried to play it off. "I'm afraid it's simply far too hot for regular tea for me. I found that in this climate there's little else to do but drink iced tea, fan oneself, and commit indiscretions." Edwin didn't completely understand what was going on, but he ignored it for the moment. The hideous woman's advances were a piece of data, presently irrelevant. But later, perhaps it would be of some use. He sipped his tea and let the silence work on her. "So what exactly is it that you do, Mr. Winslow?" "I am an evil efficiency consultant. I help villains become more..." "Villainous?" Iphigenia said, unable to contain herself. "Profitable. Terrorism, extortion, kidnapping, revenge, that sort of thing?" "On occasion. But most of those cash acquisition strategies are far, far too crude. Take, for example, a man who can run very, very fast, say twice the speed of sound."
"You mean the flight?"
"Names are unimportant, but yes, the flamer is one such man. And his problem is not learning to run faster or further. He has mastered his power. The question is, where should he run and why?" "I'm not too sure if I follow you. If I recall, the flamer is a hero."
"Ah, propaganda.
The flamer is confused. Not a bad man, but hardly what I would consider a hero or an impediment. What do you know about hospitals?"
"I have endowed several."
"Then consider the problem of an emergency room. On any given night, an emergency room has far fewer doctors than patients. All of the patients require medical care, but not all of them can be seen at the same time. So which patient goes first?"
"Well, the person who is the most hurt, I would suppose."
"Exactly. The term is triage."
"Oh, that is French. You know my ancestors were French."
"Yes, from the verb trier, to sort or sift, to discriminate. In my eyes, this word means to use a scarce resource for the greatest profit. The flamer has no triage. He enjoys stopping street crime, so that's what he does. In my mind, that's what being a hero is all about."
"What's wrong with it?"
"Nothing, as far as it goes. Which is not nearly far enough. You see, he is excellent for my business. I encourage my clients not to waste their time on small, violent crimes. There's not enough money in them. That way I remove irresponsible and self-serving nuisances like the flamer from their path."
"But his outfits are so colorful."
"Yes, but he does not help others from a selfless motive. He helps others only because it suits him."
"But he does help people."
"In his limited and irrelevant fashion, yes, he does."
"So you want my son to become a villain? Your kind of villain?"
Iphigenia was on her guard again. "Dear woman," Edwin said through a sharp smile, "all I want is for your son to be happy."
You've been listening to How to Succeed in Evil by Patrick E. McLean. For more information, visit succeedinevil.com.